Hi everyone, welcome to Lasses of Lore. In this podcast, me and my friend Claire will be discussing strange stories, folk tales, myths and legends from Britain and a few from around the world.
With the help of several G&Ts and maybe a bottle of wine or two.
So we're basically going to take it in turn to choose a story every few weeks to discuss, either a fairy tale, a strange historical incident, a legend, a myth or a ghost story.
I hope you like spooky tales and thanks for listening. You've actually made it through to episode 3. Congratulations, you still like us. Yay! This week, we thought we would discuss bog creatures.
Or, like, creatures from the marshes.
Swamp thing, whatever you want to call it. What's the difference between a bog and a marsh? I've got to ask.
I don't think there is. In my mind, a marsh is bigger, and a bog is, like, a little area, but... Like the dead marshes in Lord of the Rings gone for, like, miles and miles and miles.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Whereas, like, a bog, to me, is just a little swampy area.
Bog, to me, reminds me of the bog from Labyrinth, the bog of eternal stench.
Oh, yeah.
Like, kind of grimmer and muckier. But should we see what the internet says about bogs / marshes?
Sure.
A marsh is a nutrient-rich wetland, whereas a bog has poor soil and high peat. So there you go.
So a marsh is the good version of a bog, really.
Yeah. Bogs are shit. That's basically what the difference
is. You can tell from the name, really.
But I mean, like, there's creatures from all sorts of different folklore that live in these kind of marshlands. I suppose everything was kind of a warning to stay out, most of them.
Yeah, I can't think of a good bog creature, apart from maybe the ones I'm going to talk about, which could be kind of fairies in some cultures, but generally they're malicious, so...
Yeah. I suppose, like, it's such a dangerous environment, isn't it? Like, marshes and boglands.
Yeah,
like,
especially at night when travellers get lost and...
One wrong step and you're gone. Do you remember Mr. Fielding?
Oh, yeah, our geography teacher.
Do you remember his story?
So, in the area where we live, there are a lot of moorland areas around and they're full of sort of... Well, I guess I call it a bog rather than a marsh. It's peat bog, yeah. So I guess that's the poor soil one.
It's shit in
Yorkshire. Although peat makes good whiskey, so...
I don't like whiskey.
I'm not super keen on it, but my dad's very into peaty whiskey. He likes that a lot. But yeah, Mr. Fielding was a geography teacher at our old school, and he gave us a talk one lesson about... You know, he used to go walking up on the moors, and one class he said, if you ever get stuck in peat bog... What you've got to do is lie flat and swim your way to the edge. If you put your feet in peat bog, you're going to sink down. And I don't know why, but he went on for about an hour and a half about that. And it was meant to be a geography class. I mean, you know, sort of geography.
It's kind of geography.
Yeah, but he liked walking around the area, so I guess that's why he went off on one about it.
So now you know, if you end up in peat bog, lie flat.
But, you know, yeah, I used to go for a lot of walks with my family up on the moors, and there's a lot of bogs up there. And I remember once it was a few of us kids and we were jumping off sort of tufts into the bogs to see what kind of splat sound we could make. And I sort of got my legs sucked in and I had to pull one out and I lost a welly and I had to sort of tramp home with one soggy foot. But I made it back, so.
The joys of growing up in Yorkshire, eh?
Yeah.
I have memories of doing stuff like that and also picking bilberries on the moors. Did you ever do that?
Oh, yeah, my dad loves bilberries, so we used to find good ones.
They don't exist in Essex. A bilberry is not a thing.
Is it not?
No, apparently they're called whortleberries in Somerset.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, my boyfriend had never tasted a bilberry until I took him to Yorkshire.
Yeah, they're pretty good berries.
Eat them, they're delicious.
Yeah, not to be confused with blueberries.
Are they related to a blueberry?
They're probably in the same species, but they're not blueberries. They're not. They're bilberries.
They're tastier. Yeah. Right, so, I mean, as per normal, we are going to talk about some of the creatures and the stories, and maybe a bit of history. We were going to do facts about bogs, weren't we?
10 things that have been found in bogs that are pretty interesting.
I once went to the World Bog Snorkeling Championships in Wales.
Oh, I've seen videos of bog snorkeling.
It was quite really funny.
So bog snorkeling is basically where people ride a bike, right, down a tract of a bog, and then they have to let go of the bike and snorkel the rest of the way.
No, this one was just swimming through it. So
the videos I've seen is where they start on a bike and when the bike gets too stuck in the mud, they have to carry on swimming.
No, these guys were all... It was sponsored by Ben & Jerry's, of all things. These guys were like... all in fancy dress costume and stuff, and they had to swim from one end of a bog to the other, but there was, like, dead sheep and stuff in it.
Oh, really grim. Actually, me and my brother used to collect sheep bones we found in the bog, so, like, we took them home and cleaned them and stuff, but after a while, my parents were just like, you can't keep this bag of manky sheep bones in the house. But yeah, here's a few things that were found in bogs that are pretty amazing. So the first is called the Old Krogan Man. He's basically a preserved human that was discovered in 2003, and he's named after the bog that preserved his body. An examination of the body found that he died between 362 and 175 BC.
That's amazing that he's still preserved after all that time, isn't it?
Yeah, and obviously you can't see the picture here, but look it up online. The Krogan Man is, you know, you can still see his arms. The rest of him's not doing so well, but he looks a bit like a deflated leather sack. But his arms were well preserved.
Is he one of the ones that still has, like, tattoos that you can still see? Because I know there were some of them that were, like, preserved in bogs or ice or something, and they had, like, all these really cool, like, hand-dotted tattoos. They were amazing.
Oh, cool. No, I don't know if he had tattoos. Who's the one who was found in the ice?
The Iceman? I can't remember the name.
Well, he's just called, like, the Iceman and of something, but... Yeah, he
look
was...
it up. Google that.
One of the other things I found that's quite cool was called bog butter. So basically they found these old barrels in a bog, and they found these containers with this thick waxy substance in it that were originally thought to be several hundred year old butter. And for a long time, no one quite knew what they were. But then they found out that, in fact, it is actually preserved butter from centuries ago.
I do not recommend putting that on toast. Did someone eat, was it cheese or something that had been found in a pyramid, or there was like a bottle of wine or something?
Oh, it could be.
I can't remember.
Wouldn't that be like vinegar by now?
Yeah, it was disgusting, but someone was like, I want to drink it. Oh no, I remember what it was. There was a cheese found in a pyramid that was preserved from all that time ago, but also there was mummy juice in the bottom of a sarcophagus, and everyone was like, I want to drink the mummy juice.
Oh,
and everyone was like,
"Be like eternal life or something."
That's how you get curses.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, if you get a curse just from breaking into a tomb, if you drink the mummy juice, then you're definitely done for.
Public service.
Oh, we need to do mummies at some point. I don't know if we have any English mummies, but we'll have to look into that.
I suppose those preserved bogmen are kind of mummies, aren't they?
Yeah, they've been mummified, but they're not sort of the Egyptian, like, mummies everyone thinks of.
Yeah.
Another thing that was found was a strange object wrapped in leather that was discovered in an Irish bog, and it turned out to be an early medieval book of Christian psalms.
Oh, like someone had just gone, I don't want this anymore.
Or dropped it when the bog creatures sent them down the wrong path or something.
Yeah, look at that.
But to preserve a book, it's pretty amazing. There's also a lot of sort of murder mysteries from bogs. So there was the Lindau Man, who was discovered in 1984. And he died between 2 BC and 120 AD. And they could tell from the preserved body that he was strangled and beaten and had his throat cut. But no one knows why. So maybe some of the true crime podcasts can try and investigate that one.
Yeah. Which is the one you like again? Shout out to whichever one Heather listens
to. Oh, yeah. I love one called Slafter. It's two girls just talking about true crime cases. But they're really good and really funny.
So, hey, Slafter, if you pick this up by some miracle.
Yeah, well, they're much more popular than us. And the last one I read about was some ancient treasure that was discovered in 2009. Where a piece of metal was pulled from a bog, and it was dated at 3,000 years old and was 87% gold. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you either find a horribly mangled body or a nice piece of jewellery. So
I think I'd be pretty impressed if I'd find anything like that in a bog, to be honest, but, like, that's probably... I'm quite fascinated with archaeology and, like, the study of human remains, so to me that would be, like, bonus, finding a... preserved mummified bog body. I think
I'd go with the jewellery, but I mean, you can investigate the bodies.
Each to their own, boys and girls. So, do you want to start this week with your stories of myths? And...
I looked at Willow the Wisps for my story. I don't know, how much do you know about those creatures?
To be honest, not a lot. I've watched Brave with the little will-o'-the-wisps.
Oh, yeah, the ones in
the
Brave
stones
are actually quite nice. They send her on the right path.
Yeah.
And they're like little fairies. And some cultures consider them as fairies, but most consider them as quite malicious. Either goblins carrying lanterns or spirits with lanterns.
So there's croglins.
Strange creatures. Yeah, the croglins of the bog again. But the name will-o'-the-wisp is quite a recent thing, and in medieval Latin, it was called Ignis Fatuus, which means fool's fire. because these were lights seen by travellers, sometimes called ghost lights, on moors and bog areas at night. And they were often seen as sort of malicious forces trying to lead travellers astray and to lead them down the wrong path. They have a lot of different names in different places. So, for example, in Hertfordshire, they were called the Hobby Lantern.
I like that. That's a nice name.
That's quite cute. Another cute one is in Warwickshire, they're called Hobbity's Lantern, which is pretty similar. In East Anglia, it's simply called the Lantern Man. In Somerset and Devon, they're called Hinky Punks, which...
That rings a bell. Why do I know Hinky Punk?
Yeah, obviously J.K. Rowling knew about these and slipped them into Harry Potter. Another funny one was in Lowland Scotland, they were known as Spunkies.
Spunkies?
Yeah, so make of that what you will. In North Yorkshire, they were called Jenny with the Lantern.
Oh, that's nice.
So there's a lot of lantern-based ones. And the best-known one is from the West Country, where they were called Jackie Lantern or Jack-o'-lantern, which obviously led to the name Jack-o'-lantern for pumpkins when you put the candle in. Some sort of notable will-o'-the-wisps from different places include in Saskatchewan, there's one called St. Louis Light. And there's also the Naga fireballs on the Mekong River in Thailand. So this kind of phenomenon has been seen all over the world, and loads of different cultures have different names for it. In Welsh folklore, it's called fairy fire, which is said to be held in the hand of a pooka, which is like a small goblin-like fairy. And in Welsh folklore, they're a bit more mischievous. You know, they would still lead you astray, but they were being more...
like playful spirits.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily trying to lead you to your death. They were just trying to confuse you and have a laugh with you. Whereas in a lot of other places, they're seen as these sort of bad spirits that are trying to get you to walk off the wrong path.
I suppose in that kind of, like, marshy, boggy environment, though, like, even if it was a tricksy spirit, you'd probably still die if you go off the wrong way and you get lost. In those kind of environments, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So I suppose whichever way you look at it, whether they're trying to be nice and playful or trying to be, like, horrible and actually malicious.
Well, I guess it's like poltergeist, like people say they're not evil per se, but they're going to mess up your house.
More than a little bit.
Yeah. These kind of lights obviously were attributed to spirits or fairy folk or goblins and things like that, but... scientists have sort of pretty much shown that it's actually gas that's released from these boggy areas being ignited on its way up. So,
foiled by science, yeah.
I mean, it might still be nice to believe in them, but there's pretty good evidence to show that methane that's released in those kind of areas ignites, and that's what creates lights and these dancing fires. But obviously, to people back then, you'd still think, oh, well, that's something strange, that's a strange spirit.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of folklore is kind of trying to explain something that now we just go, oh, scientific explanation, whereas then would be completely mystifying and unbelievable. You know, it's kind of like the Northern Lights, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess back then they were seen as sort of like, I don't know what the Northern Lights were seen as, but...
be right back with that information when we've got it.
I know, like an angelic dancing pathway or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of the stories that involve Will-o'-the-Wisp usually involving a traveller walking along at night. So usually a peasant travelling home around dusk sees a little figure or a light dancing, and he follows the lantern or the lantern carrier away from home and ends up stranded in darkness. And a lot of the stories end with them on the edge of a precipice, and the light goes out, the spirit disappears, and then they don't know which way to step to either go home or fall off the precipice.
You'd just sit down, wouldn't you?
that'd be my solution. I'll just wait till morning and hope I don't die. But there's a few other places, like Devon and Cornwall, call it the Pixie Light, which I think is a slightly nicer one. But they also lead travellers away from, like, the reliable route into the bogs with the lights. And I think you can see this in Tolkien as well. Like, we mentioned the Dead Marshes. I think in that, Gollum turns around to Frodo and says, don't follow the lights. And when he does, he falls into the pool and sort of goes down towards the dead soldiers.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite scenes, actually. I really love that. I think it's really striking.
Yeah.
But I love how, like, fantasy authors take on a little bit of folklore from somewhere and, like, expand it.
Yeah, like, I think, like, we mentioned J.K. Rowling as well, and she did it so well in Harry Potter that she just took all these elements of folklore and just, like, mushed them together into this amazing thing. So, my actual story comes from Norfolk, and apparently Norfolk is a bit of a will-o'-the-wisp hotspot. So because, like, our ancestors didn't really understand the fact that these will-o'-the-wisps were sort of combustion of marsh gas that happened on warm nights, there was a lot of activity in the Norfolk area because, well, basically they didn't have a lot of drainage in that area is all I can see. So there was a lot of boggy land.
Marsh, isn't it, Norfolk?
Yeah, it was before they put drainage systems in place. It was all marshland, pretty much.
Kind of like Essex where we are, actually. Like, where our houses are, it would have been marshland, like.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously without that, there was a lot of legends around this. And in Norfolk, there was a woman called Mrs. Lubbock. And depending on what source you read, one I read she was a washerwoman. Mm-hmm. One I read she was a wise woman. So, I mean, pretty different. I'm not sure which one is true.
You could be a wise washerwoman.
Yeah, maybe she was a wise washerwoman. And she lived in Irstead in Norfolk. And according to her, the will-o'-the-wisp, or, well, they said, like, jack-o'-lantern, could be seen walking around Irstead village enclosure in about 1810. And it was quite an isolated village, and it's still pretty isolated. It's by the side of the River Ant. But, I mean, now it's quite a desirable place to live, apparently. I was reading that it's quite a quaint little area, very nice houses. It's very typical, you know, little English town.
Nice Norfolk place to retire, yeah.
Yeah, but at the time it was quite boggy, it was quite unhealthy, you know, quite a bad place to live because of that. But some of its thatched cottage have apparently survived from that time.
Really?
So it would be quite a cool place to go, maybe. But the people around there called this spirit, or will-o'-the-wisp that was wandering around, Heard, as in H-E-A-R-D, but Mr. Heard, or Heard, they called him. And he was apparently a spirit of a man who had drowned in the water around that area. And I mean, I really think this said to him, one who was guilty of many terrible crimes did drown in the peat-stained water.
Oh.
So he was obviously a little bit evil in life. So they thought, oh, after he died, he must be this strange spirit, this strange light that's sort of haunting everyone. And Mrs. Lubbock herself said, I have often seen it there, rising up and falling and twisting about and then up again. It looked exactly like a candle in a lantern. So
really cool. I wonder how they got from the light to this guy. Like, how did they make that connection? I wonder what.
I guess around then, the only sort of light on its own that you would see floating in the darkness would be a candle in a lantern being held by someone. Yeah. So if you saw a light dancing on its own, you'd assume someone has to be holding it, right?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, maybe that's where it came from. But there's also another tale from Norfolk, but actually in the seaside town of Cromer. And Cromer actually is a place I'd never heard of until a few weeks ago. And then my friend at work was talking about how he and his wife want to move there. And then I read this story about Cromer. I was just like, oh, coincidences. But this was published in the Eastern Counties magazine in 1900 about this lantern man in Cromer. And they wrote, there's no saying what that will do to you if that light on you. There was a young fellow coming home one evening and he saw the lantern man coming for him and he ran. And then he ran and ran and ran again, as you do.
Just keep running.
Now, there was a silly old man who lived down there who didn't believe in none of the things this young fellow said. When he ran to his house and said, oh, Giles, for heaven's sake, let me in. The lantern man's coming. And old Giles said, you silly fool, there ain't no such thing as a lantern man. But when he saw the lantern man coming for him, Giles let the young fellow in. And then it came for the two. Till that was the beginner of a pint pot. And I have no idea what that last bit means.
Till that was the beginning of a pint pot.
Well, so then it says, and old Giles, he thought he would play a trick on the lantern man. So he got a candle and held that out right high. And the lantern man, he came right low. And the lantern man, he came up above it. And then he held out right steady. And the lantern man, in case you've forgotten his name, they're going to repeat it quite a few times. The lantern man, he came for that and he burst it all to pieces. But they do say, if the lantern man's light be upon you, the best thing is to throw yourself flat on your face and hold your breath. Which, incidentally, is the exact same advice Mr. Fielding gave me if you get trapped in a bog. So I think it all comes full circle and he must have known what he was talking about.
Yeah.
But this lantern man as well, going back to Mrs. Lubbock in Norfolk, well, Irstead, this is all in Norfolk, there was another man, Walter Rye, in the 1870s, and he also wrote about this lantern man in Norfolk. And he said, once I heard of one following a man while he was carrying a lantern one night. The man knew what to do. He set the lantern down and ran away as if the devil kicked him. When he ventured to look round, there was the lantern man kicking the lantern over and over again. So they kind of said, if you drop your light, if you don't have a light, you can escape from the lantern man. But apparently this didn't work, because I read a thing about another man who did the same thing, and it said, oh, but it didn't work, because he's still drowned in the bog.
This is one of those cases of, like, folklore twisting with different people, isn't it? And, like, Chinese whispering.
Yeah, no one quite knows, like, what the cure is. But apparently the lantern man also lured a man called Joseph Bexfield to his death. And his grave is in a churchyard at a place called Thurlton, which is on the south of the river. Is it Yare or Yare?
I don't know.
I'm going to say Yare. Y-A-R-E. And he drowned in 1809. And the verse on his headstone reads, O cruel death that would not spare, a father kind and husband dear, great is he lost to ye three he left behind, but he thy hope will greater comfort find. And this legend about his mysterious death sort of spurred another one. So I read that one night after he got drunk at a place called the White Horse, this guy Bexfield was about to go home, but he remembered a parcel that his wife had left behind and he had to go and deliver it. And it was pitch dark and, you know, he's out on the marsh, he's on his own. And the lantern man led him off. And in this story, actually, they called it a corpse light as well, which is a less nice name than Will o' the Wisp or the kind of things you see in Brave.
a bit different.
Yeah. But the ending in that version said that there was a shadowy figure in the misty night wandering that lured him to his destruction. So that was just another one of those stories of this sighting. And apparently people say they still see things like this around Norfolk, but I think the stories have sort of died out since modern drainage has cleared up a lot of the bogs and the gases. So
I suppose a lot of this as well, like, back when a lot of these stories came about, there wasn't modern lighting. Whereas nowadays, street lighting, even in the countryside, you can kind of see where you're going.
Yeah.
You can see what's around you. So it kind of takes away a bit of that, like, deep-rooted fear. Of the dark, because really that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's that fear of the dark.
Yeah. So, yeah, and actually I was reading that, you know, in those times they blamed it on spirits or fairy folk. And then in the 1950s, when people saw similar things, they said it was UFOs. So I guess people always attribute these things to whatever the fear is at that specific time, because in the 50s you had Roswell and all the other alien stuff going on. So you just kind of blame it on whatever you think. But there was one more cool thing I wanted to talk about. I can find it. Oh, yeah, this is it. So another version of the story with Mrs. Lubbock. Mrs. Lubbock said that as a small child, her dad had told her once that he was returning from spending money, like, at the end of harvest. Mm-hmm. And he was in the company of a man who, you know, we say, like, jeered or catcalled the spirit. He sort of yelled out to him and said, like,
Oh, you spirit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he said, but apparently he sort of mocked the spirit, and the spirit obviously got pissed off. So the spirit followed them home, and it said he torched up at the windows. So I guess he sort of blazed himself into a bigger light at the windows, maybe. Unless he was, like, smoking a joint, who knows.
420
lantern. Yeah, and blazing up at the window, I'm not sure. But then some local folk, after this incident, according to this version of the story, said they needed to lay the spirit to rest and, like, exorcise the ghost. So three men tried to read some verses from the scriptures, but the spirit, which they called Jack in this version, kept a verse ahead of them, so they could never quite finish their scriptures. Then they found a boy, and I'm not sure where this boy came from. He just appeared with a pair of pigeons. And he put the pigeon...
Just out of nowhere, two pigeons.
I mean, that's all it says, like, until a boy brought a pair of pigeons. And he put them down at the feet of the ghost. And apparently the ghost looked down at the birds, and he was so distracted that he lost track of the verse he was saying. And so that was the opportunity for these three men to, like, bind his spirit.
Okay.
And so they managed to exorcise Jack or Herd or Lantern Man or whatever you want to call them.
So is that, like, the last sighting of him then?
It's the last one I could find. I mean, if you speak to people from around there, maybe there's been more. But
yeah, I mean, if anyone's seen the Lantern Man, or, like, grandparents have seen the Lantern Man. Yeah, anyone from
Yorkshire, Norfolk, who's listening.
However, yeah. If you are from Yorkshire, have you seen a Grindylow?
I've seen them in Harry Potter again, and oh, they're the ones in the Black Lake, right? The little ones that try to stop him before he gets to the Merfolk.
Yeah, so they appear in Harry Potter twice. I think it's book 3, Lupin has one in his office.
Oh yeah, because when he's trying to find out if it's actually Harry in the layer book, he's like, "What was the creature you saw that first time?" Oh yeah.
And then they were also in the Triwizard Tournament of, was it 1994? I don't know. Someone correct me on that. The Triwizard Tournament, the trial? I forgot what she's called it. Oh my god, what are they called? Are they trials?
Yeah, the three trials. Right?
Yeah. Brain's just gone. In the trial where they have to go and rescue their loved one from the big lake, the Grindylows take Fleur Delacour down. That's what stops her winning that trial.
Oh, yeah, remember? Yeah.
And they mess around with Harry a bit as well. So you'll know them quite well. Like I said, J.K. Rowling was really good because she took a lot of these kind of folk creatures that were almost been forgotten about.
Yeah, well, I'd never heard... I'd heard Willow the Wisp, I'd never heard Hinky Punk, and so obviously she took that. And I'd never heard the word Grindylow.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, before you said it's in my story this week,
yeah,
I thought it was just a Harry Potter creature. Like, I thought J.K. Rowling had made up the word Grindylow.
Yeah, and she didn't. She really did pull on a lot of traditional English folklore, so it's quite interesting. So the Grindylow is from Yorkshire. And occasionally Lancashire. Apparently they weren't bothered by borders like we are. And the name's thought to be connected to Grendel from, you know, the old English poem Beowulf.
Oh, yeah.
Which you should know lots about.
Yeah, I studied Beowulf at university. I studied some old English to look at a translation of it. And, yeah, so Grendel was the monster that attacked, what you call it, a town, or the king's palace, basically, Hrothgar's palace. And Beowulf had to beat Grendel. Well, really, he had to beat Grendel's mother because she birthed the monster. But
yeah, it's a long, complicated poem. Do read it, though. It's really interesting.
Very epic.
Very epic.
Well, literally, it's an epic. But yeah.
But yeah, so it's meant to be kind of related to the idea of Grendel. And it's seen in connection with things like meres, bogs, lakes, that kind of thing.
Mere, that's the word I was trying to think of when we were talking about words for marshes.
Like a pond in a boggy area, isn't it, a mere?
But when does a pond become a bog, or a bog is a pond?
Could be local dialect. Maybe it's a, I don't know. But,
well, a pond has to be like a lot of water, right? Whereas a bog is tufts of grass between the water, so...
I don't know. I really don't know. When is it a pool? When does a pool become a pond, become a mere?
I'd say a pond is smaller than a pool.
Do you think? I don't know. This is all getting into
when
semantics.
Does a puddle become a pond? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you can drown in all of them.
Yeah, don't follow the lights.
Do not follow the light. So Grindylow is meant to be these weird little kind of horny green creatures, kind of like water sprites. And they're said to grab children or older people with their long sinewy arms. And anyone who comes too close, they're supposed to pull them under and drown them.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of similar to Will-o'-the-Wisp, but a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, I think Will-o'-the-Wisp were just sort of leading people the wrong way, whereas these sound like they're actively dragging you in.
Yeah, and they really were used as kind of tools to scare kids away from going near the marshes.
You know, same as the boogeyman scaring you from going out in the dark, like, it's just what parents use to stop you running about and being silly.
So they've appeared in quite a lot of popular culture, like Harry Potter and things like that, as well as a book called The Scar by China Mayville, who is a great author. You should definitely check that out. And they're also in Pathfinder role-playing games.
Oh, right.
So they're in quite a few things. But there's a couple of kind of famous water spirits. There's Peg Powler, who I don't really know much about, so please do tell us if you know more about her. And there's also Jenny Greenteeth.
Well, that's a cool name. Did she have green teeth?
Yeah, she was green all over.
Oh, why did they focus on the teeth then? Why isn't it just Green Jenny?
Green Jenny. She's got a few different names. If you can bear with me, I will find some of her names. I think she was called the Green Teeth, the Water Fairy and something. She was called Ginny Green Teeth somewhere. You know, there's quite a lot of different versions of her.
Okay.
And she, you know, she was basically a Yorkshire and Lancashire spirit of rivers who would pull people down, like we said about the Grindylows. So there's a story that goes something like there was a family with a mother, a son, a father and a grandma. And the son is playing too close to the marshes, and the grandma's like, "Don't do that, Ginny Greenteeth will get you." And obviously the son's like, "Ginny Greenteeth doesn't exist. You know,
oh, yeah, she do.
You're just a crazy old lady." And obviously, end of the story, he goes into the marshes, Ginny pulls him under, and he dies.
Oh, well, see, always listen to grandma. That's what I've learned from all these stories.
Always listen to grandma. So, yeah, there's been hundreds of sightings of Ginny Greenteeth across the years.
Do you think that might be where J.K. Rowling took the name Ginny as well?
It could be, I don't really know. Is Ginny sort of a Guinevere as well?
Oh, it might be.
It could be.
I'm not sure.
Not sure. But anyway, she was meant to be, like, completely green with sharp teeth and long green algae hair. Have you ever seen, I think it's duckweed?
It's
like that algae on top of the rivers. That was meant to be a sign that she was there. So I suppose that might be a sign that the water's deeper there or something and it needs to grow in deeper water.
So that would be why parents would want their kids staying specifically away from the deep water.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Ginny Greenteeth. So I found a really cool little poem that sailors used to say about Ginny Greenteeth. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go for it.
Come into the water, love. Dance beneath the waves. Where dwell the dones of sailor lads. Sorry, the bones. Try again. Come into the water, love. Dance beneath the waves. Where dwell the bones of sailor lads inside the saffron cave. And that was about her pulling sailors under
the water. Cool. That's kind of the same meter as that crocodile one from Alice in Wonderland. Is it?
Yeah.
How doth the little crocodile...
Blah, 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 blah.
It's like adorn his shining scales or something. Oh, yeah. How doth the little crocodile improve his shining tail and pour the waters of the Nile on every golden scale.
That's definitely Lewis Carroll in it. That's some crazy
stuff. I always loved that poem, though, from the Alice in Wonderland film.
Yeah, same kind of meter, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Ginny Greenteeth has also gone on a little wander, and she's seen in Staffordshire as well. And she's been seen in Staffordshire, like, as recently as the last 50 years.
Does that mean she swam to Staffordshire?
Well, actually, the place they've seen her is a place called Doxy Pool, which my dad used to tell me about, because my grandma lives in Staffordshire, and we used to drive over the moorlands by the Roaches, which is kind of like Derbyshire-Staffordshire border. My dad would always be like, that's the mermaid's pool. Like, don't ever go, because it's bottomless, and there's a mean mermaid in there.
We'll have to go sometime and see if we can find the mermaid.
Yeah, it's really cool. Apparently, I mean, it's meant to be bottomless, is this pool. And apparently they tried to drain it once, and everyone that tried to, like, drain it right to the bottom to find the bottom died.
Huh.
So I thought that was a little bit of a cool thing.
Yeah, that's interesting, if they ever managed to drain it.
Yeah. And apparently that's kind of a bit of a different play on mermaid, because it's a mermaid.
Oh, right, yeah, so a maid of the bogs instead of a maid of the sea.
Yeah, so I thought
that seems
quite
like
cool.
Quite a downgrade from a mermaid. Like, my sisters live in the sea, I live in the bog.
Yeah, sisters get beautiful clam bras, and I get algae for hair.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
No, I wouldn't want to brush it.
No.
So that's kind of our little bit about bog creatures. I mean, there's bog creatures all over the world that we could talk about. I mean, there's this kind of folklore all over the world. So, like, obviously you've got Grindylows, you've got Will-o'-the-Wisps, you've got Jenny Greenteeth, you've also got the Naki, which Finnish children are scared of. And that's a shape-shifting water spirit that pulls people over. You've got the Rusalki, which is a Russian ghost of drowned Russian maidens who entice bachelors with their singing or dancing, kind of like a siren in Greek mythology.
So is that in the bog rather than the sea? Because I've only heard of, like, sea sirens. Or are they, like, bog sirens?
The bog siren and the mermaid is, like, the worst team ever. I don't know, to be honest. I'd have to do a little bit more research. Maybe when we do, like, sea creatures and mermaids, we should look
into
that.
When we do sea creatures, we should go through some more of these.
There's also the Vodianoi of Slavic Europe, who are tiny old men covered in algae who loaf about on sunken logs, smoking pipe and drowning humans.
Well, they sound like they're having a good time. Like, smoke a pipe, drown a human.
It's
great
kind of
day.
Life goals.
Yeah.
And there's the Kappa of Japan as well.
Oh, I've heard about the Kappa.
Kind of like humanoid turtle things that some people say are based on giant salamanders, but it's kind of a loosely based. And they're like a trickster god kind of creature who loudly fart and peer up women's kimonos.
Oh, okay.
And then drown and eat people. So I think they might be my favourite.
Well, they're covering all bases, really.
Yeah. They're having a good time as well.
Yeah. So, they should team up with those other little men and chill out somewhere between Japan and Slavic Europe.
Yeah, so now we've found out that actually we would quite like to be a bog creature, and we're going to round off for today.
Yeah, so if you enjoyed the episode, remember to give us a like or subscribe or send us a message or leave us a review. If there's any particular folk tales or creatures you'd like us to discuss, we can have a look at messages and see about that.
Or even, like, if we've told a story and you know a different version of that story, we'd really like to know as well.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, so next week we're going to be discussing werewolves. werewolf, so join us for that.
Yep, we've got the Southend werewolf for you.
Well, I've got a werewolf from Hull, and this is a modern werewolf from 2016. So stay tuned.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Heather and Claire, and we'd like to do a special shout out to Rainbow Strange for letting us use her tune Spooky Girlfriend. Thanks for listening.